The lady said the show goes live in five seconds.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
I love that doorman. Welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon. I am, of course, Madame Perry, your host and cruise director tonight, as always. Of course, you also may know me or could call me Jennifer Perry or the mods, Jennifer Maudette Perry. But either way, I am absolutely thrilled to be here because this podcast gets more and more and more fun with all the cool people we've had on and the cool people coming and the cool people tonight. But just to go over, too, if you would please, if you're listening live on Blog Talk Radio, there's that little rectangle that says follow. Please click follow if you haven't already and follow or subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. So if you want to go back and listen to some of the fun episodes with Chasm Sultan or Rudy Sarzo, Daryl Rhodes, you've got them right there. They're all downloadable at no cost. And just to go over some of the things recently, you know, we had Alison Arngrim on. Get her book, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. You know her from Little House on the Prairie as Naughty Little Nellie Olson. But she's a fantastic woman and very, very funny, hilarious book. It's got some sad, some rough parts in there, but still, she's a great sense of humor. She's a great stand-up comic and actress and activist. Also, too, some other books of guests that have been on. I do want you to put on your library, Off the Rails, Rudy Sarzo, about his time. It was when he had to leave Quiet Riot because he got hired by Ozzy Osbourne. And it's about the tour with Ozzy when his friend Randy died. Rudy is also still playing, and he's also quite a busy animal rights activist, as is his wife, Chasm Sultan, who was on a few weeks ago. Got a new CD called Bootleg, and he's on tour again with Todd Rundgren. And I may see you at a Todd show if you're there. Who else? Jennifer Irwin was here. Jennifer Irwin has a book called Address the Color of the Sky. Now, when Jennifer was on, well, we talked about her book, but you couldn't buy it because her book's not published. But she was already inking the deal for a movie. And I think Bradley Cooper's playing the lead. Reese Witherspoon is involved somehow. And so, Jennifer Irwin, we are so happy for you to come back. Coming soon, I got to tell you this too, what's coming up in the next couple of weeks. We have got M. William Phelps. If you know true crime authors, he's one of the best, and he's on TV a lot, like Investigation Discovery and those shows. He's going to be there. I think he's written two books, or put out two books in the last 9 months. One is Don't Tell a Soul. I just read that. Also, Bobby Rebel, her book is How to Be a Financial Grown-Up. Frenchie and the Punk, Steampunk Cabaret, will be here on Wednesday the 10th, and Athena Bass. She's a drummer in L.A., Athena Bass. She was married to a guy, I think James Kotak in Warrant or Scorpions, but she's the little sister of Tommy Lee. So we are looking forward to Athena Bass. That's going to be a lot of fun, too. She's sensational. She's great. She's also on a TV show called Rockstar Ex-Wives or something. So it gets better and better and better all the time. And especially tonight, if anybody who knows me, a friend of mine, knows I have been sharing the videos and sharing work and information about tonight's guest for a long time. Finally, he's got this book that's published, and we can buy it, and it's God Bless Cambodia, and I want to God bless the author, Randy Ross, for being here at Madame Perry Salon. Welcome, Randy Ross.
Yay. Hey.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
I am thrilled. Of course, we're here with co-host, actor and author, Duffy Odom. Duffy.
Y'all know me. I'm Duffy Odom.
Everybody
I'm doing
knows
great.
Duffy Odom, no matter what name you're going by. But, Duffy, I'm so glad you're here because I know that you've been checking out Randy's stuff, too, and you know and you say you understand why I'm such a huge fan. Started reading your watching your videos, reading your blog, and your one-man show, The Chronic Singles Handbook, has been around the world. But where do
yeah,
we
I've
begin?
Been doing it,
where do we begin?
What?
Well, I've been doing the show all over the U.S. and Canada. I've been performing at something called Fringe Festivals, which are just what it sounds like. It's edgy, no bars, and you can get up there and do pretty much whatever you want. So I've got this 1 hour one man show, and it's based on the novel, and it's what I've been doing to promote the novel.
Oh yeah, great. And you're still doing the show.
I've got eight. So the book just came out, and this year I'm trying to do eight fringe festivals. So this is kind of my book tour. So I just did a festival down in Greenwich Village in New York. I just came back from Pittsburgh. I'm leaving for Ottawa, Canada in June. Then I'm doing Kansas City, Indianapolis, Salt Lake City, Chicago, Elgin, Illinois, and I'm still waiting to hear from Baltimore.
Oh.
Well, we hope you're coming down south.
That would be nice.
I've tried to a couple places down there. Mm-hmm. I've done Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Orlando, Florida. So I think the closest I'm going to get this year is Indianapolis.
Okay.
This time. Next time you can come to Atlanta. There's lots of, places in Atlanta.
Actually, I did an Atlanta Fringe Festival like 3 years ago.
Hmm.
And yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I can't remember, there's a funky art, where's the funky art area?
It's not really an
area.
Which
one?
Pockets.
Little Five Points.
Something like a triangle.
Emmett Park.
It was like some kind of triangle.
I can't remember the name of it.
Inman Park, Little Five Points.
Little Five Points.
All the Decatur area.
It could have been anywhere
in Metro Atlanta,
too.
Yeah, you got a lot of art stuff.
We got a large metro area that's not exactly in Atlanta, too.
Yeah.
But they claim it.
There are a lot of head shops around there. Does that make it any
I think he's definitely talking about Little Five Points, don't you, Duffy?
I think so. Yeah, somewhere.
Yeah. Was it rather colorful? I mean, the walls, the buildings, the walls, everything had murals.
Yes.
That's it.
And
it's
there was a theater.
There was
a rundown theater and hotel, which is where I was staying and where I performed. And it was fun. I had a lot of folks there.
Oh, great.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's a pretty laid-back place down there, pretty fun. And, too, I'm part-time in Asheville, so you're going to have to come to Asheville, too. There's a lot of stuff going on there, and Charlotte as well. So, yeah, Randy, I'm booking you a tour already down here, so you're going to have to give me some dates. I'm going to fill them in. Okay.
That would be fabulous.
You know that's what I do. So,
your people call her.
You were at the... Yeah. I think I'm the people. Randy, you took this to not just the U.S., but to Canada, Edinburgh, Scotland, which is a very popular fringe festival there.
Yeah, actually, that's the biggest arts festival of any kind in the entire world. So there, when I was there, they typically get where there's like 3,000 performers that go there for this festival. And they have millions of people running around. It was a blast. It was a lot of fun. It's very, very competitive. There's a lot of really, really good acts there. But it was fun. It was fun.
So you've been touring. So you've been writing, touring the world. But for people who are new to you, tell us how the story got started.
Well,
the Chronic Singles Handbook.
Okay. Well, I worked for a computer magazine for 15 years. I got laid off in 2007, and I really didn't want to go get a regular job. So I'm in the bookstore and I'm thumbing through the books, and there, you know, I was in the travel section, and I was looking through all these Lonely Planet guides and Rough guides, and they all make, you know, a trip around the world sound really easy and inexpensive. And every one of these books also has a big, they also have a big section on sexually transmitted diseases. So I'm a single guy, and I was like, well, this sounds like a party. Sign me up. So I went and I spent $6,000 on plane tickets, and I went to Venezuela and Greece and South Africa and Thailand and Vietnam and Cambodia and Australia and New Zealand, and I had a rotten time. I had a horrible time. It was awful. You know, one of the things, you know, about budget travel, so I was 48 years old at the time, and budget travel means you're staying in hostels with high school kids. You're also taking like all these red eye flights. So one month I took 3 red eye flights. You know, it's like every other week I was taking a red eye flight, and some of them are, you know, they're 27 hours long because you have these stopovers. You know, this is all how it's cheap. And did I mention I was staying in hostels with all these high school kids?
I heard something about that.
These weren't the good kinds of stories, though. The other thing is, I think you go on a trip like that, you don't really know whether you're configured to travel for 4 months by yourself until you do it. And basically, after 2 weeks, I was ready to come home. I was like, you know, this is, but you know, I'd already bought all these plane tickets, so I wasn't coming home. But I was having a, you know, I was having a rotten time. I was lonely. So a lot of the time I was by myself, I was writing this. I would go to the local internet cafe and I would write. And when I got home, I had a blog that was 150 pages of material, and it was all, you know, kvetching and moaning. But I had 150 pages of this stuff. So that's what became the book, and that's what became the show.
Did you do the show and then do the book? Or you did the book?
I did them kind of simultaneously. The book took me. It was my first novel, so it took me about 8 years to write, and I rewrote it from top to bottom 4 times.
Uh-huh.
And what I would do is, when I took the trips, this is like 2007, 2008. I came back, had all these notes. I wrote up a draft, and this was around the time that Eat, Pray, Love came out. So, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert wrote this book. She's selling, you know, 5 million copies. I was like, oh, hey, if I sell 100,000 copies, that should be easy. So I write this travel memoir, and I go to a writer's conference, and I'm talking to this agent, and the agent says, you know what, there's no market for travel memoirs. Make it a memoir. So I spent another year and a half, and I rewrite it as a memoir. And then I go to another conference, and I talk to an agent, and the agent says, you know what, there's no market for memoirs unless you're Kennedy. Why don't you turn it into a novel? So another year and a half, I rewrite it. And I go to a conference,
Another 6 months there, yeah. 6 months there where memoirs were hot. Everybody wanted. Workshops. Everybody had to learn how to write a memoir.
Bingo.
Yeah, yeah. And then it was gone, you know.
Yes. And I missed it. It took me a year and a half to write the memoir. And by the time I got done, it was, it already passed. I rewrote it as a novel. And then I go to a conference, and I'm talking to this agent. I'm showing it to them, and they said, you know, this isn't bad. You know, you ever thought about turning this into a travel memoir? So at that point, I was like. I decided I was just going to write what I wanted to write, which was, you know, the novel was fun.
Yeah.
And you could just make, you can make up all kinds of stuff. This process was about 8 years. But during that time, I started performing like bits and pieces, of the novel. So that, I mean, Jennifer, that's what you saw, that Klonop, Vicodin, now it's Vicodin, Ambien,
yeah.
Anakin. What do unemployed writers have for breakfast? But that started as a bit out of the book. I memorized it. I was, you know, doing it at, you know, open mics for poetry and for any place that would let me get up there. And so I did that piece, and then I had a few other ones. I have a piece called The Day I Was Almost Gay, which is a hitchhiking story.
Yeah, I saw that. That was great.
But I put together a few of these things, and then I met a guy at a party who had been performing one-man shows, and I was talking to him, and he said, look, you got enough material here. I can show you how to turn this into a one-man show. So I started working with this guy, and eventually I had this one-hour one-man show, which became the Chronic Singles Handbook. So it's a boiled-down version of the novel. It also has a different ending than the novel, and obviously, so a novel is 12 hours of material, and the show, I had to boil it down to an hour. So you got to throw out all kinds of stuff to get. You got to get rid of a lot of stuff to cut it down.
Okay.
Had you ever been a performance artist or anything, or done an
actor? That's a great question. No, I hadn't, and I was terrified. I took for my job. I used to have to give presentations, and I wouldn't sleep for a week before I had to give a presentation. And I went and took the Dale Carnegie course and Toastmasters, and it didn't. It's still nerve wracking. I don't know about you. I mean, Duff, you've done a lot of comedy stuff. Do you still get nervous?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a stage fright, but you learn how to. There's that still small voice that you have to shove something up its ass and say, "Get out of my way," and just go. Lights are on. You just got to head for the hot spot. Because once you're out there, you've got no control. You just got to do it. You can't.
Yeah.
You either freeze or you die. It's, but I've been doing it a long. I did it for a long time. I started out very very little, and my problem was always getting overconfident and going out and kind of blasting something out that's supposed to be really subdued, and I get overexcited and I say, well, I better just walk off, okay? I'm just making a fool of myself. I just got to get back in the wings a little bit for a second. So, but I do get it. I have gotten it. Yeah, when I did the show with Fred, both of us had questions about where the script was going because it was scripted, and we weren't too happy about not being able to go off into tangents if we wanted to, because both of us were improv guys, and we wanted to, be able to wing it and make it funny. And the writer and the producer are real 70s comedy, and it was too much like America's Home Videos, and we wanted it to be a little more bizarre than that, and so it was kind of nerve-wracking being feeling like you're in a cage and not looking stilted,
So, I get
anytime you get up, it's different every time, you just gotta.
And the audiences respond. I'm sorry.
The audience, especially in a one-man show, the audience is going to change your direction and your attitude about it, because one audience is going to laugh at one thing, and
Bingo.
The other audience is either isn't going to get it, or they just went right over their heads, or they got it, and so what?
They don't like it. They don't like what they got.
Exactly. And by the way, if you're listening live here, I want to stop just a second and say I'm here with Randy Ross, author of God Bless Cambodia, and Duffy Odom. And if you want to call in with a question or comment for Randy Ross, the number is 646-716-9922, and that is toll-free in the continental U.S., Blog Talk Radio assures me. So some people message in their questions. I think I've got one now being messaged in and or about to be. But anyway, what and you know, too, I was going to say, I did stand-up for a long time because I wanted to be a singer, but I was had stage fright, so I did stand-up, the scariest thing in the world. And we would do that,
yes.
too, you know, because you go to we would all, like, there was a bunch of us that started off doing open mics in the same cluster of us in the Atlanta area. We'd go to one club on a Monday night, do material, you know, you either kill or you bomb. And then 24 hours later, we're in another county doing the same material, completely the opposite reaction. So, then the last time I did stand up was in Charlotte, which is a place you should go. There's like a music factory, and a friend of mine who does traffic on the radio for several states, Joy Barge, she says, well, I'll go ahead and put it out, you know, when I'm doing the traffic, and I do traffic in that area too, and I'll say, by the way, go down to the Comedy Zone and in Charlotte and see my friend Jennifer Perry. So when I come back out, and when I'm hanging around the comics, I make this short because I know that we're talking about you, Andy, but this is the kind of thing that you know what happens. So I'm hanging out with the comics there that I've just met after we've done the show, and we see this couple. We think they're fighting, but then we find out the girl passed out. She had a heroin overdose, and then we go up there. We call for help, and she turns blue. She dies. But, I mean, she's gone. And then the paramedics come. They do all this stuff. They do this. They do all the things. They bring her back. I mean, she was blue. I watched her. And then they bring her back, and they put her in the ambulance. They go to the hospital. I go to get in the car, and then my friend Joy calls me, who had done the she said, oh, well, I told people about it on the radio. How'd you do? Did you kill? And I said, listen, not my fault,
you
okay?
Know.
I'm not taking crap for this. I had nothing to do with that.
People are saying, hey,
that's
you ought to do this.
Thing.
You ought to see this show. They got to, you know, with the paramedics and everything. Try to duplicate
it. Did you kill?
Okay?
Are you kidding? The fire trucks are still leaving. So, but anyway, but back to you. Back to you, Randy. So,
Back to me.
Back to you, baby. So tell us all
I got
about
a question.
Okay.
I got a question. Randy, I saw you were on a podcast or something, and you were talking about rejections. We've talked to other writers here about rejections, and I've talked about it, dealing with it, and what you do when you have to go to like 100, you know, get 100 rejection slips, and then, you know, how do you keep from falling apart or think you're doing the wrong thing? And how did you deal with that? And what was your experience with it?
That's a great question. So when I finally finished the book, so I had all these agents that had, you know, had been telling me all these different things. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to do what I want to do. So I finished the book and I sent it out to, in the end, I sent it out to 110 agents. 50 of them said, you know, take a hike. 7 of them requested the manuscript and then said, take a hike. And then I started sending it directly to, you know, publishers. So those are basically the two steps. You try and get an agent. If you can't, then you send your stuff directly to publishers. And I sent it to 15 publishers and finally one of them bought it, which was the Permanent Press. But it's hard. You know, and some, you know, after you get a few of these rejection letters, and they say all kinds of stuff. There's, you know, so one of them doesn't, you know, one of them says it's too offensive. One of them says it's not funny. Another one says it's too slow. You know, they say all this stuff, and you know, at a certain point, you either decide you're going to change it or you're not going to change it. And I've been working on this thing at this point for, you know, like I was saying, like 7 or 8 years. And I'm like, I'm not changing this. If they don't want it, I'm just going to move on.
Yeah.
The thing I did was halfway through the process, I started a second book. I was like, okay, this first one, it may not be ready. It may not sell. I'm going to start a second one. So that kind of distracted me a little bit from the whole process. But yeah, you get pretty down. You quit for a week or a month. And you're like, you know, I just can't look at this. And you know, then you got to get back in there, which is, you know, kind of what you were saying about performing when you're out there. It's similar to performing. You're out there with the audience. You're out there. You have an audience. They're not laughing. You know, my show is an hour long, so I'm out there. After 10 or 15 minutes, I can tell whether these people are going to like the show or not. If I see people cringing, I know they're being offended by the material. And in the back of my head, I say, if they're offended by this stuff, wait till they get to the real nasty stuff. And you know, you just kind of keep going, and you finish it. And sometimes it's like, okay, the real nasty stuff comes, they were already offended. I'm just going to mash it. You know, I'm just going to rub it in their face. I'm going to give it all I got. And then you're done. Then you get off the stage and go, you know, kind of go about your business. But yeah, it's hard. I don't have any great advice on that except just, you know, keep going. It's hard. Mm-hmm. This is a tough business.
So it's not a memoir. So it's got like a protagonist, a guy that's doing what you were doing.
Similar what he did. I mean, I'm kind of this is kind of my alter ego, but this is fiction. I mean, if you wanted to go through here and check the facts, you know, there's not probably eight percent of this stuff actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's my best guess. So
you
I did take a trip around the world.
Yeah, you followed him around. Okay.
I don't know if you have anything ready to read, but could you just tell us one story from the book for people listening that haven't heard? Anything you choose, but I like the story where you decide to go on the trip and you go to get the information about your shots or any kind of vaccinations or shots.
The visit to the vaccine nurse. I got the book in front of me. Let me just scroll to that. Wednesday, visit travel clinic. A nurse wearing a black hoodie under a starched lab coat hustles me into her office. Her skin is paler than a snake's belly. Her computer sports a bumper sticker. I stop for entrails. Where are you headed, she asks. Where are you headed, she asks, tracking out something outside her window. Venezuela, Greece, South Africa, Thailand, Vietnam, and Australia, I say, watching her watch what is probably a squirrel. Sounds like fun, she says. After clicking at her keyboard a little too long, she looks directly at me for the first time. You're going to need 7 shots, and we'll need some blood. My hands grip the armrests. I feel myself rocking in my chair. A breath is stuck in my lungs. A newbie, eh? She says. You'll be fine. She hands me pamphlets on malaria and something called chikungunya fever. Then she starts doling out the prescriptions. If you get the runs, in Venezuela, take ciprofloxacin. In Thailand, take azithromycin. In Cambodia, take Pepto-Bismol daily. It can turn your tongue black, but some women might like that look. By the time she finishes with me, I'm afraid to leave my apartment, never mind the country. And it goes on a little longer.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I can't think of anything more horrible than to be stuck in some unknown place, like another planet.
Sadistic nurse.
This must be horrifying.
And there's also a scene in here where he goes in. So all these travel books, you know, they recommend you buy all this camping gear. So there's a scene in here where the narrator goes to one of these camping stores, and the guy, the salesman, has just come back from a trip through Southeast Asia. So the narrator's asking the salesman, you know, do you have this? Do you have that? Do you have the other thing? And all the salesman is really interested in is telling this guy about all the bar girls he slept with and all the prostitutes and all the naughty places he went to visit. He's not really interested in listening to what the narrator needs as far as gear. He just wants to tell him about all his exploits over there.
Oh, I can't wait.
Steph, you haven't heard you laugh like that in a long time.
Yeah, it's cracking me up. I just can't imagine what it's like. I mean, a road trip in hell. You're like wanting to go home the second you step into this other place, you know.
Okay.
It's almost like science
fiction. If you're listening, the number to call, talk to Randy Ross is 646-716-9922 here at Madame Perry Salon. And Randy Smith, the author of God Bless Cambodia, brand new book. He's all over the world. But you've got to get this book. Have I ever lied to anybody, Duffy, about what a good about what which books are good and what they need? I don't think so.
No, never.
So you were talking about how you're marketing your book, and mostly through festivals or special events or anything. I guess you're doing theater festivals. What about do you do ever any lectures to writing groups or anything or?
Yeah, actually, I have a lecture that I've given. So what I've been doing, I've given it a couple times in Boston, and what I do with these theater festivals is I contact writers groups that are in the same city as the theater festival, and I give a lecture, which is pretty much my experience as far as approaching agents, approaching small presses, mistakes I made, and suggest stuff that. Stuff that I did that kind of worked, which goes kind of against the conventional wisdom. One of the things is they tell you if you contact an agent and you don't hear from them, that means they're not interested. Don't contact them again. So I read someplace, actually it was some agent's blog, where she said that's baloney. If you haven't heard from them in 6 weeks, contact them again. So that I started doing that, and I ended up getting a couple of agents. I would write them nicely. I would send my query letter. If I didn't hear in 6 weeks, I would go to the email that I sent them, and I would click reply all. So it would go back to the agent, and it would say, R-E, the name of my book in the subject. So, they might think that they already responded or something. And then in the body of the message, I said, I sent this 6 weeks ago. Just want to make sure it didn't get caught in your spam filter. If you need anything else, let me know. And then below it was the query letter and then the first five pages. And I had a bunch of agents that said, actually, I didn't see this. Why don't you send me the manuscript? I had one agent who was referred to me by a friend, and he didn't respond the first time, the second time. But the third time that I sent him the same message, again, the same thing with, regarding, my book, and I hope this didn't get caught in your spam filter. This agent said, oh, yeah, why don't you send me the manuscript? So, that was one thing that they tell you not to do that I did, and that worked. Because you kind of have nothing to lose. If they're not that interested, they're not interested.
Well, as long as you're not pushy about it. You do what you gave them. Hey, I don't know if you get this, got through your spam filter. Because things like that happen, or things get deleted accidentally. And that's the proper way to do it. And that's what, when I teach people in my DIY publicity for authors webinars, that's what I tell them, be nice, be considerate. Think about if you were on the other end.
Yes.
Because it's like and whatever you do, if you can make their job easier, like not being a diva, but coming prepared, completely prepared, they'll love you. They'll do anything. They'll have you back. It's like I used to get – when I had a TV show on cable, I used to get people that would call in the morning, and I was going to a day job, and then I'd get back. And then I'd go edit the show, then I'd get home, and I'd do these angry calls. Why won't you call me back? You've never called back. And then I'd call back, leave a message. Will you please tell her I called? Then I get this, you think you're too good to call people back? Okay, now listen, I have called you people. I've got the cell phone records, okay? I was working for the cell phone company. I've got the cell phone records. I called you, you know. But then we rumor, you know, that Jennifer Perry, she's really a bitch, you know. I can't help it if you can't answer the phone, you know, or you can't get a message from your, you know, from your dope-addled roommates or something. But anyway, just that's the way to do it. That's the perfect way to do it. And so, and then, of course, you got through to them, and they had the pleasure of having you there, which gets to spread the Randy Roth gospel a little further. And by the way, folks, if you listen, the website is randyrossmedia.com, randyrossmedia.com, because for one thing, to separate him from all the other Randy Rosses out there who are imposters and do other various and sundry things. And also because he's a pretty, as you can tell, a pretty savvy guy about marketing. He lectures. He has a blog and lectures about self-promotion and marketing for writers. And believe me, if there's anybody you want to talk to, it's him. He's also, you were executive editor for PC World. And that's an award-winning website, so PCWorld.com. You with a master's in journalism from Northwestern. Not too shabby, Randy Roth.
Thank you.
But, certainly. And so now, on your website, we can go on there and see the novel. You can see you've got your calendar there, where you're going to be. You got some of your videos. You've also got links to all your social mediums because you're on Twitter, where I first discovered you, thank goodness, and you're on LinkedIn, everywhere else. You've got, I'm looking at your 2017 calendar, and you've got bookings up through September. But if you want to book Randy Roth, he's still got some places in between. You can catch him, grab him. Let me ask you, does a book like this, especially with Chronic Singles Handbook, does that intend to invite a lot of women wanting to kind of rescue you?
It hasn't. I don't know why. It hasn't been, no. Also, because some of the material's a little, I guess, risque would be the nice way to put it. I'm not getting the groupies I was hoping for. But up in Canada, last summer, I met a woman who actually, she bought my book, came to my show, and we dated for about 6 months. But she was way up in Calgary, so that was. Mm-hmm. But.
Oh. Mm-hmm. What they call geographically undesirable.
See. Both of us.
That's a term used around Atlanta. I have to think about inside the perimeter and outside the perimeter, and what's geographically undesirable. Because I was watching. I got to tell you this. I was watching your. Tell me the name if I get it wrong. Domination for Dummies.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that the name of it?
Yeah. That's,
and I got to tell you.
That's it.
You've got a very Chris Rock type of skill going on there. Because when I see Chris Rock, I think sometimes he goes and he's like, got everybody. Then he kind of gets to a part where people are uncomfortable. And then he makes them maybe a little more uncomfortable. You know, and I don't think you meant it, but you know what the thing about, you know, sit down, shut up, open your mouth. And then just when you think they're going to turn off the TV or I'm going to hit, you know, or never mind, I'm not going to watch this one, then he pulls them back. And that's exactly what you would do. Like, I'll put this pill in your mouth. What is this ecstasy? Oh, yeah, like you can get this kind of dope. You know, it's like the sub. It's like the sub is giving you attitude. So I don't know if you like Chris Rock, but yeah, I noticed you had that same, that perfect skill that he has, like being able to get people on the edge and then snap them back into your corner, you know, to where they're right there with you.
Uh-huh. And it depends. It depends on the person, because that is a scene out of my show, and if a reviewer is going to blast me, that's the scene that they go for. You know, they're misogynist, and they go. You know, some of them will just go off on a tangent. You know, on that scene, you know, especially in the political climate we're in right now, where everybody's, you know, hypersensitive and super sensitive, and so that particular scene, I get, my reviews are mixed. I get people that love it and people that hate it, and the ones that hate it, That's the one scene that they all jump on. My mother's
not
seen the show a bunch of times. Doesn't bother her.
Well, that's good. If you want to talk to Randy, well, yeah, number 646. Okay, hold on. 646-716-9922. And we have a caller here. Andrea Robbins.
Hey, are you there?
Okay, I don't know.
Can you hear me?
Okay, now. Can you? Yes, we can hear you now. All right.
Yep.
Okay, because there was a little bit of a delay. Randy, I have a question about one of your reviews. I think it was Paul, somebody that said your book is more fun than syphilis. A fair review, do you think?
That was my review. That was my review of my book.
Oh, you reviewed your own book?
No, that. But
oh,
I
the
had
truth
to,
is
in my press release, I say I have more fun than syphilis, and then I say Paul Gauguin, and I say way more fun, Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton.
I have these made up quotes.
Oh my God!
You know, Paul Gauguin knew a thing or two. Paul Gauguin knew a thing or two about syphilis.
Yes,
sure did. You know, and the thing is, when I was looking at that name, I was thinking, could that? No, wait a second. That guy is like several hundred years old, isn't he? I don't think he should be reviewing stuff on the web, you know.
Hey, it's a new alt reality, okay?
Yeah, in so many ways. So I missed the first like 15 minutes or so, and I was just wondering if this is completely autobiographical.
It is inspired loosely by actual events. So the plot of the book and my life. I got laid off. I took a trip around the world. And I had a rotten time. That's about all the stuff that's actually true out of the book.
Right.
So I went to all the countries that are listed in the book I've been to, but the cities don't exist. The people don't exist. The girlfriends that are in the book don't exist. The friends don't exist.
You have a pretty bleak existence, I think.
Maybe.
I'm sorry, maybe. That just came out.
It's all in my head. Yes.
Traveling is not always as glamorous as one thinks it is. I know the second time I went to Europe, I hitchhiked from Amsterdam to Ankara, Turkey, which was in the 70s. The boyfriends are few and far between, but you know, once in a while they were there. But I never thought of writing a book about it, you know. I mean, I always thought nobody seemed to identify with my story, so I figured I probably should just keep it under wraps, you know. But
this book is more about the plot has to do with travel. But the book itself is about how one middle-aged single guy comes to grip with loneliness and the fact that he's not married and may never get married, and he finally learns that he's okay with that. So it's kind of an acceptance story. The travel is kind of incidental because you know it's a search. He's searching for happiness. He's searching for the woman of his dreams and. And in the end, he realizes, hey, you know, this could be the way it is, and maybe I should make the best out of it. So maybe
Randy, for sure.
When you don't have any choices, you
just settle for it.
You make the best out of it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Madam Perry. Go ahead. I'm not being very polite here.
Oh, no. I'm thrilled to have you here. This is a party. You know, we're all here in the genie bottle, and you're a dear friend of the show, Andrea. And so, no, I'm just trying to butt in because I want to ask Randy two things, and one of them I think you'll really enjoy.
Okay.
One is, Randy, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you another question, but after that, I wondered if you would read something again, and maybe if I can choose something about the thing about dating, about the chart that you made about the dating and the match.com and everything,
the dating spreadsheet. Okay.
But before that, while you're finding it in the book, I have heard you said, and maybe it might have been when you and I were talking somewhere recently, that you said you found indie bookstores are not always friendly to indie authors. And I just want to know, what was your experience with that?
I was kind of surprised. Some of the indie bookstores that I approached, they wanted to charge me to do a reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's common.
I was shocked. I mean, you know, I thought indie is supposed to be helping indie, and they want to charge $200 for me to give a reading in their store. What I was going to do, a lot of these stores, I was going to bring in books. So I bought a bunch of books from the publisher for myself because I've been selling them at the shows. So I was going to bring in some books to these bookstores, and you know, they all have different deals as far as consignment. Typically, you know, the writer gets 60% of the price of the book, and the store gets 40. But some of these stores wanted 50%. Yeah, so this is my first time doing it. I was just surprised. I mean, these are indie bookstores I've been going to for years, and I assumed that they wanted to help out independent small authors. And it just looks like some of them were trying to gouge the writers. I have a reading at some bookstores are not like that. So there's one in Cambridge, part of Boston where I'm living, called Porter Square Books. They were great. Yeah, we got a nice, they have a beautiful store. They have a nice place to do a reading. They were, come on in, bring your books. But some of these other ones, and these were some of the smaller stores that were in Connecticut or other places, and they wanted to charge. Because the writer's going in there. My readings are a show, so I do scenes out of my show. It's a performance. And I'm gonna pay them $200.
And I've seen some that will also some indies that will also not just gouge you on the splitting the price, the 60-40. They will do a 50-50, but they also some will charge anywhere from depending on the level of service you want to buy, anywhere from $20 to $25 to $100. We'll put it on the shelf and sell it. Just to put it on the shelf and sell it and still take half the profits. Some will say, and we'll also sit it near the front desk, for another $50, sit it near the register. And then again, there's one in Asheville that everybody is very popular and people all over know about it. And they did that because I was going to send a client there, book a client in there. And they go, but we have to have this money up front, to do this. And so then I just went ahead and booked her in both Barnes & Nobles in the area. So I said, well, most Barnes & Nobles don't want you competing with the other one in the area. They go, oh, we're fine with that, When they set it up, she sold out both. But I thought we tried the indie first, we did, but what are you going to do?
Big publishers, I guess they give them – they give them extra money to have certain positions within the store or on the shelf,
And they want it from indie authors, knowing how hard they're working.
Yes.
And then when everybody started pulling out of their big all their big authors started pulling out of their personal appearances because of the what they call the bathroom bill in North Carolina, then they were out whining, oh, please come support us, please come support us. It's kind of hard to feel for you there, but
I feel your pain.
Really?
See you later,
bingo.
Okay, so are you ready to read?
Oh, actually, I was off on my little tangent. Here it is. Okay. So the narrator.
This is exciting.
The narrator's kind of depressed about the whole dating situation. He's preparing to go on this trip, or he's thinking about it. His friends are, recommending all these dating sites, and here he's home and he's getting a little depressed. And so when some people get depressed about dating, they consult friends, relatives, or an astrologer. Me, I consult a dating spreadsheet that lists women I've dated over the last 20 years, how we met, and how long we lasted. Analyzing past trends reminds me that I've survived droughts before, and by projecting the data forward, I've even been able to predict when I'd next meet someone. But when I open dates.xls this time, the forecast isn't good. It's late spring, and historically summer is my slow season. Worse still, there's no data. Worse still, there's no data for how I'll fare without a fancy job title. I am literally and figuratively in uncharted territory. A lesser person in this situation might languish in the dark place, but I'm a man of action, or as my therapist says, reaction. Take Nikki, listed in cell A30. I dated her on and off for 3 years in my 30s until she finally gave me the heave-ho for offenses too numerous to recount. For weeks, I moped around the house. Then I moped around a Barnes & Noble where I spotted a book on how to grow marijuana in a closet. I figured if growing the plants didn't help me forget Nikki, smoking the crop certainly would.
Right on. That was a very creative solution to that enigma there.
Yeah. I think there's more. Keep reading.
Yeah, more.
Okay. I keep shutting it. Let me go back to Max, I can start. Do you want me to just read the first opening few pages?
Sure.
Whatever.
Of the. Okay. And it's okay for men. Oh, so little off color stuff is okay on the podcast, on the radio.
We're all adults here. We're all free thinking adults.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Mm-hmm. The
morning. I have virgin ears.
Oh, shut up,
no, just kidding.
Do not. Not after your trip to Europe, okay?
You're right.
That's
no,
true.
You're right. Now that I think of it, you're right.
The morning sun streams through my bay window and illuminates a cheap print of Crane Beach and a row of golden vials in my double-wide medicine cabinet. I stand there pondering this week's big question. Vicodin, Ambien, or Heineken? What do unemployed people have for breakfast? Lately, making even the smallest decision has become an ordeal. Cash or charge? Draft or bottle? Girl on girl or teens with toys? I wash down a Vicodin with a beer and crawl back into bed. The phone wakes me at noon. I lift my sleep blindfold to check caller ID. It's Abe. He's been my closest friend for 10 years, but in recent months, I seem to have slid off his priority list. Whenever I call him, I get voicemail, and maybe 3 days later, an email. Let's see. Abe is a great... I'm drawn to abrasive, angry people. My therapist, Dr. Moody, says I'm attracted to people and things that make me uncomfortable. Maybe so. I'm shy but drawn to women with rabid, foaming, over-the-top personalities. I'm afraid to be alone but find most people dull and annoying, except for the abrasive, angry ones. I don't know if you want me to keep...
Just a little bit more, please, because we're hooked. Okay, we'll still buy the book. We're not going to say, "Oh well, I've already heard it."
Let's see. I'm afraid to be alone, to find most people dull and annoying, except for the abrasive, angry ones. This doesn't make much sense. Therapy hasn't made much sense, and neither has paying $125 an hour to a shrink named Dr. Moody. I stick with it because I like Moody. He's kind of a dick, like Abe. The phone starts ringing again. I imagine Abe cursing on the other end because he knows I'm home and not answering. Moody says that I take people's actions too personally and that relationships naturally ebb and flow. He may have a point. Over the last year, all my close friendships seem to be ebbing. Maybe it's because we're all in our late 40s and preoccupied with the developmental milestones of our age group. One, finding a reliable sleeping pill. Two, acquiring a long-term care policy. Three, securing a relationship with that someone special who will pick us up after a colonoscopy.
Okay, go ahead.
When my friend Abe had a colonoscopy 2 years ago, I found the time to pick him up. But now that his new wife, Amy, manages his calendar, can I count on him to reciprocate? I decide to take his call. What's up, Abe? Abe says, Burns, that's the narrator's name is Burns. Burns, you wouldn't believe the screwed up thing that happened to me last week. This is how we begin all our conversations. It's our standard greeting, our secret handshake. Generally, the ensuing monologue covers his job, and today is no different. In the weeds, he says, goose eggs in sales, zeros in accounting.
Randy Ross, if you're listening live, you have about 3 more minutes that you can call in and speak to Randy Ross or ask him a question. But make sure you go to his website, randyrossmedia.com. You can also find him on Twitter as well as everything else, LinkedIn, Instagram, social media. He's very savvy at that. He also God Bless Cambodia is available from the Permanent Press. That is the publisher that had enough sense to know that this was a great book and they ought to be having it. And also, Randy teaches classes in marketing and self-promotion with the latest of options available to writers and authors for promoting their book. And believe me, he knows from whence he speaks. Also about building, he will teach you about building your blog and social media marketing. So he can do lectures, customize them for content and time constraints. So just go to his website, check it out, look at his artist CV. He's lectured at Emerson College, Regis College. I'd say to Randy Ross, you're the real thing, and we're having so much fun with you. we've got about 2 more minutes, and I've just been so happy to have you here, and also Duffy Odom and Andrea Robinson. That was getting to feel like a pajama party, wasn't it? Like we should have been listening to the story and toasted marshmallows and making some margaritas or something. I don't know. Randy, what else do you have to say to us before you go, besides buy the book?
And listen to your show.
Okay, that's good, too. I wasn't trying to go to him, but thank you.
Go to
your website.
And just as far as for other writers out there, people that are working on their first books, it's a tough environment. But you gotta finish it. You gotta finish your book, despite what people are telling you.
I hear you. I'm working on something.
Gotta get it out there. All right, so if you're looking to see Randy Ross in person, of course, he's got a lot of videos. You've got a YouTube channel, and I just posted today, I posted your video of your bungee jump 478 feet, and into a gorge in New Zealand. I posted that earlier. And let's see. That was way cool. Also, June 2nd, he's having a book launch party at Dyer Readers Literary City in Out of the Blue 2 in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Between June 8th and 18th, Randy will be doing 6 performances at the Ottawa Fringe Festival in Ottawa, Canada. July, he'll be in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Kansas City Fringe Festival between July 20th and 30th, Salt Lake City Fringe Festival, August 4th and 6th, and Indy Fringe Festival later in the middle of August in Indianapolis. All these things are on his website, and it's a great website. You can find everything very easily. Randy Ross, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here, and I'm so proud of you, and God bless Cambodia, and I'm proud of the Permanent Press for publishing it and being the home for God Bless Cambodia.
Uh-huh. I can't thank you enough. Really
search Amazon. Search Amazon and at least get the Kindle. It's great. Yeah, everybody will love it.
Yeah, it's available Kindle, paperback, and hardback. That's how thoughtful Randy Ross is. He wants to give you a choice. I'll be looking forward to the audiobook soon. And thank you for being so generous with your time and for entertaining us here tonight. And also, everybody that's listening out there, Colin Kelly, who's the managing editor of Atlanta In Town Magazine, sent a message just a few minutes ago saying he was on the way somewhere to a literary event, but he said, sounds great, congratulations to you, and wishes you all the best. Who else? David Hurley sent a message, the same thing. He says, man, this is great stuff. Look forward to reading it. Thank you all. And, of course, the rest of the pajama party here, Duffy Odom, Andrea Robinson, out on the West Coast. Randy Ross, will you please come back to Madame Perry Salon sometime, because it's been a great honor and a lot of fun.
I would love to. Thank you. Thank you all again. Really appreciate it.
Bye. Thank you. And, of course, you know my motto. Everybody's got to swing on.